Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the flying swine flu vaccine right after this. You know, once in a while, we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider, like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft back in 1880. Someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press, and Swinton outraged all of his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now you know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand it would never appear in print. He said, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are, he said, the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend it's time to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and to stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and to survive this New World Order, this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can download it directly or stream it right off our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Vaccines, swine flu vaccination. It's in the news. They're telling us now that they're expecting that there may be a rerun of the 1918 Spanish flu. I'll give you a little historical background, and then I'll fill you in on what the government's up to and what they're telling us. And then we'll take a look at this thing of vaccination. Is it really the best way to avoid getting the flu, or is there something else we might do that might be as effective or maybe even more effective, or which might be more health or healthful for you than this vaccine? Just to give you an idea, 88% of Americans believe in vaccines and vaccinations. They don't have any problem lining up and taking their shots. They may not like spending the $25 to get it, or they may be lazy, and maybe they just don't want to take the time to go get the vaccine. But they're not opposed to it on religious grounds or philosophical grounds or on health grounds. They're just, for the most part, they're just ignorant and don't know any better, or they don't know one way or the other, never looked into it. They believe what the government and medicine tells them. Now, 12% of Americans are opposed to it, and the 12% who are opposed to it are radical. They're people that have read and studied and are familiar with the vaccine story. Now, 12% of the people of America total about 36 million people. Now, that's quite a bunch of folks. That's quite a bunch of people. That's more people than all of you Canadians. That's more people than all of you people in Australia. That's more people than all you people in South Africa. That's more people than all you guys down there in New Zealand. I mean, if you took a look around the world at the number of people who live in your country, 36 million people. Now, that's quite a bunch of people. If, for instance, all of the people of Australia were united and they were opposed to something and they said, hell no, we won't go, that would make quite a, make quite a headline in the newspaper or on the 6 o'clock news. If you got all the people of Australia uptight about something, or all the people of Canada, or all the people of South Africa, 20 million people, or 30 million people, or 40 million people, that's quite a chunk of change there. So when we talk about 36 million people, and all these people are armed with facts and figures and names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. I mean, these 36 million people, they know what they're talking about. They can sit there and they can pull out facts and figures and quote them to you. I'm one of those. I'm one of them. I am opposed to vaccines, period. Every single one of them. And I've looked into it. I'm not just ignorant, and I don't know. I've actually read. In fact, I'm looking at a file folder here. I went into my cabinet, and I pulled out a file folder. Now, this one here is an 8.5 by 11 file folder. It's probably got 100 pages in it, probably filled with about 30. Pulled a couple of books out here, one called The Poison Needle. I've got another one around here somewhere, Death by Injection or Poison by Injection, written by Eustace Mullins. I forgot now exactly what the title was. I was looking for it, and I couldn't put my fingers right on it, but Eustace Mullins wrote one. There's a lot of material out there on vaccines and vaccination. I mean, if you just went to the internet and plugged in vaccines and vaccination, I mean, hell, you'd come up with a lot of information. Now, 264 million Americans have never done that. They've never done a research project on vaccines or vaccination. If you're like the average Joe Sixpack, you went to school, you got your 35 shots just like everybody else, and you probably survived it all right, and you're perfectly happy with the outcome and the results of it. Now, 264 million people, that's a lot of people, but that isn't 264 million articulate, informed people. Those are just passive people that don't know one way or the other. They're not for it, they're not against it, and they're for it not because they've got any particular knowledge that makes it worthwhile, but because they don't have any information to counter it, so they go along with the majority. You know, to get along, you go along. So the lines are drawn here in America between that 12 and 88%. 264 million people can't be wrong would be the mantra used by the majority. That's 88% versus 12%. Now, I've got to tell you a little story here. Years ago, when I was a youngster, I had some children. And my firstborn, Ted, was in school. Now, I forget, kindergarten or first grade, sent him to private school in Berkeley, California. And one day, the little boy came home, and he had a note from the teacher. And the note said, next Wednesday, we're going to have vaccinations. Please sign the enclosed form so that we can vaccinate your son, Ted. Now, I want to point this out to you, that whenever there's a vaccination comes up, they always seek your permission, mother and daddy, mom and dad. They tell you that it's mandatory, but then they want you to sign this form. Well, let me ask you this. If it's mandatory, why does anybody need your consent? When you sign the form, you're giving your consent. Now, if this is mandatory, then if you were to say, no, I don't want my child vaccinated, aren't they just going to vaccinate him anyway because it's mandatory and it's the law? Or are you afraid they're going to take your child away from you? So, well, the lesser of two evils is to go ahead and get him vaccinated, even though I don't want it. I wouldn't go out of my way to do it, but I'm afraid of the consequences because I'm ignorant. I mean, there's people out there like that. Well, anyway, I suppose I was 30 years old. You know, I might have been 30, 35. Let me think about this for a minute. If my boy Ted was 6 years old, he was born in 68. So I'd have been about 35 years old, 35, young fella. And I had looked into vaccine by that time, and I didn't want it. And so I wrote a note back, and I said, I don't want my son Ted vaccinated next Wednesday, so leave him out of the vaccination program. And then I went on, and I said, now, just in case this is going to pose a problem to you, I will keep my boy Ted home next Wednesday so that you don't make a mistake and accidentally vaccinate him. You see, I wasn't just passive about it. I was absolutely adamant that my boy Ted is not going to get those vaccines. Now, I know the average Joe Sixpack sitting out there, especially, you know, if you're a young mother, you're probably sitting there gasping for air like Judy Hartson, you know, about to go tell Mr. Witt about what little Georgie Gordon's been up to out on the playground. But I just wanted to point out that nothing passive about me now. I was absolutely adamant. By God, you. In fact, I put a paragraph in the letter. I said, now, if you have an accident next Wednesday and you vaccinate my child, now that I've told you don't do that, you may rest assured that litigation will surely follow. My God, now that's pretty damn serious. You vaccinate my kid and we're going to have litigation. I'm going to sue your school. And so I put another paragraph in there and I said, now, with that said, if there's any chance that there might be an accident next Wednesday and that you might accidentally vaccinate my kid, then give me a call or send me another note and I'll keep him home to prevent that. And I'd rather keep my kid out of school for a day than have an accident. All right, so now that's what happens when you're dealing with people that are serious. You know, when you've researched something out and you've got the facts and figures and the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, and the smoking gun, and then you know what you're talking about, and by God, next Wednesday, my kid better not be vaccinated. Okay, so some time went by, dear. So. And I got a telephone call, and it was the school nurse. Now she called up, nice lady, wonderful lady, I'm sure, probably went to college, probably had a degree after her name, articulate, well-spoken, knowledgeable. And she said that she would like to inform me of some facts that maybe I didn't know. Now, I was 35 years old, and I had read quite a bit about vaccinations, but I got to tell you, you know, I don't have a medical degree, and I never went to college, and I'd be the first one to admit there's probably a lot of things out there that I don't know. So when somebody says, well, would you give me 5 minutes of your time so that I could inform you of something that you might not know, I'll almost always give them 5 minutes. And so I said, well, say on, man. So she went on and she explained to me about vaccinations and about how they'd saved humanity, and without vaccines and vaccinations, humankind would have been dead long ago. Thank God for Louis Pasteur and so on. Now, she didn't tell me anything that I hadn't read and didn't know, but, you know, I wanted to be polite and give her the time of day. And so when she got through, I said, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking the time to call me. I said, now, in regards to my letter, is there going to be any problem with my Ted being there next Wednesday? Because I do not want him vaccinated, and if you think there might be a problem, I'll just keep him home, and then there won't be that problem. And she assured me that I could send my kid to school on Wednesday, and he would not get vaccinated without that signed form. She said, we had a form in there, and you have to sign it, and without your permission, we won't vaccinate. She assured me that this is totally voluntary and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, thank you very much. Now, I want to point out that in California at that time, this is back about 1972 or 3 or something like that, it was the law back in those days that all children attending public school had to be vaccinated. Now, I'm not sure about private school. Now, this nurse assured me that this is voluntary, and I thought, well, that's pretty good. Now, if you're a religious objector, or let's suppose you have some immune malfunction, let's suppose you have AIDS, and vaccines could kill you, so you can get a medical exemption. Let's suppose that you're a conscientious objector. You're just opposed to vaccines on some other ground, moral grounds or something else. You can get an exemption. If you're a religious objector, you can get a religious objection. So, you know, there's ways around the law of general applicability. But you have to apply it, and you have to know how. And so I was applying the religious trump card. First Amendment, free exercise, Seeger versus U.S. I'm going to jump on you with both feet here, lady. Now, the lady, she said to me, in effect, that anybody who would deny this vaccine to their child would, in effect, hate their child. I don't remember exactly how she worded that, but it was words to the effect that you must hate your child. Or at the very least, you know, you really have no concern or no care for your child. And I thought, now, wait a minute. I sat down and wrote a letter. It was about 2 pages long. I mean, I took about an hour to sit there and write a letter and explain. I have spent many hours reading about inoculations and vaccines. I'm not the guy that knows everything about it, but I'm not totally ignorant. I know a little something. And my conclusion was that they're bad for my kid, they're bad for society, they're bad for me. I don't want any part of them, butt out, leave me alone. But as a libertarian, I don't want to get in your way. See, I believe in freedom of choice. And if you want to vaccinate your kid, I'll drive you down to the clinic. I mean, I'm the kind of guy that would give you a ride. And if you think I would sit there and try to talk you out of it, I wouldn't. I might ask, have you done any research on vaccines? I mean, I've got relatives, you know, I've got children that call here and talk to me. I never try to proselytize these people and tell them, no, don't do this or don't do that. I figure, you know, that by the time people reach 21, they're old enough to make up their own mind. And if you've decided that you want your flu shot, my God, I'll drive you down to the clinic. I'm not opposed to flu shots. I'm not opposed to vaccination. So I'm not trying to do away with the CDC or vaccinations or to get in the way of the 264 million Americans that want their children vaccinated. What I'm trying to prevent here, I don't want you 264 million people with all of your religious zeal forcing this on me. You know, I'm a Protestant. I am protesting this, but just for me and my family. I mean, I'm not protesting this for anybody else. So after this lady had told me that I must hate my kid, I asked her this question. So I'm just going to ask everybody out there, just listen up, and let's use a little common sense here, just for funsies. I said, ma'am, let me ask you this. Are there any other children that are being exempted or who will not be getting their vaccine next Wednesday? And she said, none. Everyone next Wednesday is going to be vaccinated, and the only child that will not be protected will be your son, Ted. I said, okay. And how many children are there? She said, there were 41. So there's 41 children in this little private school. All of them are going to be vaccinated except my boy, Ted. I said, okay. Now, let me ask you this. When the other 40 children are all vaccinated, let's assume, for the sake of our discussion, my boy Ted is not vaccinated, and he has the measles, and he comes to school, unbeknownst to me, unbeknownst to anybody there, and he is infected with measles. Will he pose any threat to the other 40 children there? And she said, no, no. You see, the other 40 children will all be protected. They will have been vaccinated. They cannot get the measles because that's the purpose behind vaccination. It's to protect you from the disease. And I said, my God, let me ask you this. I said, now, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here that my boy Ted, the only child in school who does not have the protection, comes to school one day. Can any of the other 40 children give my boy Ted the measles after they have been vaccinated? And she says, no, of course not. They've all been vaccinated. They can't get the measles, and they can't spread it to anybody else. That's the purpose for vaccination. It protects you so that you can't get it and you can't give it. I said, my God, that's wonderful. That's what I wanted to hear. That's the best news I've heard all day. I said, no, let's think about this for a minute, lady. My boy Ted will be the only child there who isn't vaccinated. If my boy Ted becomes exposed and has the measles and comes to school, he will not pose a threat to any of the other children because they're all protected. They've all been vaccinated. Conversely, if any of those children are exposed to the measles, they can't get it. Therefore, they can't give it to my boy Ted. My boy Ted can never get the measles. At least he can't get the measles from any of the children in school that he's most likely to come in contact with, and he can't give it to any of them. So there isn't any need to give my boy Ted the vaccine, is there? And there was this long, pregnant pause. It's the long, pregnant pause of common sense. Whenever you broach the subject of common sense, there's always this long, pregnant pause. Can you hear it? That's it right there. It's the long, pregnant pause. She didn't have an answer for that, so she went back to explaining to me why vaccination was so important and how humanity had been saved from extinction by vaccination. I said, ma'am, you've already explained that to me. And that's where the conversation terminated. All right, my boy Ted wasn't vaccinated. My boy Ted came down with the measles. He went through, it's what we call a childhood disease. He went through the natural cycle which strengthened his immune system. And he never had the measles twice. And he has an immunity to the measles because he had it once. And it's what we call natural immunity. Now, if you'll notice, these people keep telling you that every once in a while you have to come back and get a booster shot for this measles thing. You ever notice that? Now, if you get the measles, it's inconvenient. Your kid's sick for a week, and then once it's over, okay? Then it's the end of it. I had five children. All five of them got the measles at some point in time, chicken pox, whooping cough, and all the rest of the childhood diseases. Now they're all immune to it, and that's the end of it. It's the way God designed it. It's the way the process works. Now, for some reason, somebody woke up one day. I suspect that it's for money. These shots cost $25 a piece, and you're giving 35 shots to your kid by the time he's 35. Now, you may not be paying for all of these, but if you're not, then you can rest assured that you're paying for it in the form of taxes. It's being paid for by Medicare, Medicaid, or some government program. I know we have free education for all children in public school, but those schools cost $10,000 per child per year, and you're paying for it in the form of taxes. It's the most expensive educational system in the world, the one we have right here in America, the one that we practice, the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto, free education for all children in public school. There's nothing free about it. There isn't a single free shot out there. None. Zero. Zilch. There are no free vaccinations out there. Never have been, aren't now, and aren't going to be. And you're going to pay for it. And so am I, and so is everybody else, and we pay for it by way of taxes. So if you've got 35 shots, that's what they're proposing now, times $25, that's $875. Now, if you take $875, that's the full vaccine program for your child. Now, there's 50 million kids in the country. Well, there's more than that, but there's 50 million going to public school. So you take 875 times 50. So let's go 875 times 50. Is $43,750 million. That's $43,750,000,000. Now that goes to the medicine industry. Goes to doctors and nurses and pharmaceutical companies, and I'm sure that they all need that $43 billion. And I'm not opposed to Merck and Pfizer and the rest of them all sharing in that $43 billion. I don't want to pay my $875. I don't want to pay the money. Number one, and number two, I don't want the risk and the side effects that go along with the vaccines. And that's the other side of the story. And as I said, I'm not opposed to you doing it, and if I can help you in any way, you just drop me a line. My God, I'll give you a ride down to the clinic. But count me out. Now, I thought I would tell you why I want to be counted out and why 12% of our population, about 36 million Americans, want to be counted out. That's for the benefit of you 264 million people who are smarter than. It's pretty obvious that when you've got 264 million people that are in favor of something and 36 million people that are opposed to it, the 264 million are the majority. They're smarter than the 36 million dissenters. That's democracy. It's the way we believe. So I wanted to ask this question. Could it be that the majority has been deceived? I know it's a stretch. I don't deny that, but could it be? I was driving down to Mountain Home yesterday, and my wife, sitting there in the back seat, she leaned over to me and she said, "Did you ever notice that all houses face the street?" And I said, yes, I have noticed that. All houses face the street. I have never seen a house where the backyard faced the street and the front door faced the backyard. I've never seen one like that. And that's not to say that they don't exist, but I haven't observed that. And she said, "Don't you think that's a little strange, since most people never use the front door anyway? They come through the garage or they come through the back door or the side door." And I said, "You know, I never thought about houses facing the street, and I never thought about the front door always faces the street, and I never thought about a thing being strange that the front door faces the street, and I never thought of the thing strange that most people never use the front door. Never entered my mind. Nobody ever broached the subject until right now. This is the first time in my life. I'm 70 years old. I've never in my life had somebody ask me a question, why does the front door face the street?" And I said to her, I said, "You know, that's a very astute observation. I have no idea why the front door faces the street. I know that it does, and I know that everybody's front door faces the street. And I know that I've built a lot of houses. I've remodeled a lot of houses. I've been in the construction business nearly all my life, and I can tell you with certainty that's true. The front door always faces the street, but I have no understanding as to why. I wonder if somebody has ever built a house with the backyard facing the street and the front door facing the backyard. Has anybody ever done that? No building contractor. Are there any laws that require it? Does the building code of your city require you to build your house with the front door facing the street? I don't know. I've never seen a building code that required that, but I've never seen a house built with the back door facing the street." So there you are. Now, you might be sitting there saying, "Hey, this guy's lost his mind." No, I bring it to your attention because, like vaccinations, I'm not sure that very many people have ever asked the question, why do we get vaccinated? Why do we do this? I know it's common. I know everybody does. But can you give me five reasons why? You know, if you want to test this, just go up to any Catholic and ask him for five reasons why he's a Catholic. We know that a billion people in the world are Catholics, but why? Why would anybody in his right mind want to be a Catholic? Well, for that matter, if you're a Catholic and you're offended at the concept, why would anybody in his right mind want to be a Lutheran or a Protestant or a Episcopalian or something else? People don't make these choices. That's what the bottom line is. You did not choose Catholicism. Now, there are some proselytes that woke up one day and said, "I think I want to become a Catholic." But, you know, if you went out on the street and started talking to Catholics, I mean, you're going to go a long ways before you ever find a Catholic proselyte. People are born into Catholicism. They don't choose that. And by the time they're 21 years old, they've accepted it, and there isn't any reason for them to make any other choice. You know, why are you a Catholic? Because it's the only logical choice in life. Well, I don't know. If you'll stop and think about it for a minute, most people in the world are not Catholic. And so Catholics are a minority, if you wanted to. Wanted to get right down to it. So the reason that I bring this to your attention is so that we start asking questions like, why do you do that? And, you know, if you don't have a reason why you're doing it, well, then you ought to ask yourself, well, am I really doing the right thing here? Or am I just doing this because somebody convinced me that I ought to because I've never looked into it and I really don't know why I shouldn't? So we're going to take a look at why you shouldn't when we come back. Meanwhile, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective, non-state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the law hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these law hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order that CD package by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can get that free introductory CD package by downloading it or streaming it on the Internet by going to our webpage at georgegordon.org. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. We should all keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we're citing here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. But they should. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the swine flu vaccine. My bet would be, if I was a betting man, and I am, I would bet that mandatory vaccination for this swine flu is coming to the United States of America in the year 2009. Put that down on your calendar. Let's see if I'm right. Now, my record of prophecy and fulfilled prophecy is really pretty poor. I don't think I've ever made a prophecy that ever came to pass. So I think I'm batting about 100% in error. But if I had any money to put on this bet, I'd be betting on it. Boy, they're hot and heavy after, aren't they? I mean, every night, Brian Williams, Katie Couric, and Charlie Gibson have a story on the flu. They got a story every night. Now, that sends me a signal. The mainstream press has been working us over for about a year, maybe two, but I mean, hot and heavy for the last year. And they've got this flu season 2009 coming up, and I mean, they are really pushing. They are pushing. So I'm over here working my little heart out, and I plan to avoid my swine flu vaccine this year. In fact, I might have to practice quarantine. I might have to lock my gate out here and not be able to leave for you know, 2 or 3 months. I was talking to the wife the other day. I said, are we ready for this? I said, I don't know what you people in the city are going to do. You got to go to work. You got to go to school. You know, you have to comply with the laws in these big cities. So I don't know what you people are going to do out there, and I know what I'm going to do. Before I take that vaccine, you will have to drag me kicking and screaming every damn step of the way. I mean, I'll be kicking and screaming. I'm going to do everything I can to avoid it. I wouldn't tell you to avoid it. That's not my point. I just wanted to do a story here this week and tell you about vaccines in general. This vaccine thing, it's been going on since 1859. That's about the historical beginning of it. It starts in England in 1859. We'll talk a little about that. We've had mandatory vaccines and mandatory vaccination programs worldwide in many, many countries for 150 years. So this isn't something new. It's been going on for a long time. And in every single case, we have a result, a historical result. I mean, you can go to the books and you can look up the result. You can look at the mandatory vaccination program from 1859 to 1865 for smallpox in Great Britain and take a look at the number of smallpox cases you had in 1840, 1845, 1850, 55, 60, 65, 70. I mean, you can take a look and see what the results were. I mean, if it was a good result, you can see it, and if it's a bad result, you can see that too. Now, if there are bad results, sometimes people say to me, well, they would tell us. Well, who is this they that would tell us if there was a bad result? I mean, let me ask you this. Do you think that Merck and Pfizer and the pharmaceutical industry would come out and say, oh, my God, we vaccinated millions of people for polio, and we got a bad result from it, so let me explain this bad result, and we're going to stop giving polio vaccinations? Do you honest to God believe that's going to happen? Now, if we were to assume that vaccines work and that the polio vaccine worked so well that it eliminated polio, last year there were 69 cases of polio in the United States. Writing that down, 69 cases of polio. All 69 cases were caused by the polio vaccine, no exception. 50 million children received the polio vaccine, and 69 of them got polio. There's no wild strains of polio out there. Polio has been eradicated. There isn't any need to vaccinate people for polio. There hasn't been a single case of wild strain polio for 50 years in the United States. We vaccinate every kid in the country for it. What are you doing that for? Let's get back to common sense again, you know. If you have eliminated the disease, then there isn't any need for the vaccine, is there? I mean, wasn't that the goal? Isn't that what they're telling us? They're looking for a vaccine to cure cancer. When they come up with it, they're going to give all of us the vaccine. None of us will ever get cancer again. So why would we want to get the vaccine? See, I'm not sure that people are able to think any longer. It's kind of like asking the question, why do people build the front door, build their houses for the front door facing the street? My wife asked me that question on the way to Mountain Home yesterday, and I couldn't answer. She said, aren't you a general contractor? I said, yes, ma'am, I'm a general contractor. Well, then answer the question. I said, I don't know. Why don't you just ask every architect that you come up to, why do you build the front door facing the street? Architects have always built houses with the front door facing the street. I've never seen a rule, regulation, custom usage, or practice that required it. But, you know, well, because if you built the back door facing the street, the house wouldn't sell. How many houses with the back door facing the street have been built that didn't sell? And we can identify so that we know why it is that we build houses with the front doors facing the street. I noticed that when we build the front door facing the street, we put all the landscaping in to hide the front door and to hide the entrance to the house so that we can have privacy. I did notice that. So I thought, why don't we build a fence right on the sidewalk, 6 foot high, with the backyard facing the street and the front door facing the backyard, which in this case would be the front yard. The front yard would be in the back of the house. No, the front yard would be in the front of the house, and the back of the house would be facing the street. And the front yard and the face of the front door would be facing the front yard, which would be behind the house, or would it be in front of the house, which is facing the backyard, that would be the front yard. All right, now, when we take a look at the other side of the coin, there was a story came out of Astoria, Oregon. Let me give you another little illustration here. In World War II, we were afraid the Japanese were going to attack the west coast of the United States. So there was a big hangar, I think it was a blimp hangar up there in Astoria, and there was room in there for 30 or 35 fighter planes. Rains a lot up there, you know, in the Pacific Northwest, and they put these fighter airplanes, you know, inside this great big hangar. There's about 30 of them in there. Now, when the air raid siren went off, it took 30 minutes to get these 30 airplanes out of the hangar, or about 1 minute per plane to get them out of the hangar and then get them out there where they could crank up and take off and go meet the Japanese. And one day somebody woke up and said, you know, if there's actually an air raid, we're not going to have 30 minutes warning. I mean, come on, let's wake up here, you know. We're going to get maybe 3 to 5 minutes worth of warning and if we're doing good. And we need to get these airplanes out of this hangar in something less than 30 minutes. Well, they got to thinking about it, and they were working on how to get the airplanes out of the hangar. And some guy walked over one day and said, why don't we think about how can we get the hangar off of the airplanes? You know, just turn this thing right on its ear. And now, when you broach a subject like that, you know, everybody looks at you and says you're some kind of nut. Everybody that comes up with one of these revolutionary ideas, you know, like vaccinations are bad for you, is, you know, coming right out of the chute in that. But why don't we ask some questions here? So in this case, they started thinking about it, and they said, okay, and what's your plan? He said, what we do is we jack the hangar up, and we put it on rails, two rails, one on each side. Instead of having this thing sitting on a foundation, why don't we have it sitting on rails with big railroad wheels? And then let's just start the motor, and how long would it take to move this 200-foot and 300-foot hangar 300 feet, and if we had electric motors on it, and they got to figuring that out, and they said, hell, it takes about 60 seconds to move the hangar. That's right, 60 seconds. So they jacked it up, and they put wheels underneath it on each side, put a long rail out there, you know, and sure enough, they could take the hangar off the airplanes in 60 seconds, and then while the airplanes are inside warming up, you know, they just go every 30 pilots running there, all jumping their airplanes. The airplanes are all sitting inside the hangar. Now, all of a sudden, all the airplane motors are running. 60 seconds later, the hangar's off the airplanes, and the airplanes can take off in 30 different directions to go get out on the runways and so on, take off. And it solved the problem from 30 minutes to 1 minute. Instead of taking the airplanes out of the hangar, we're going to take the hangar off the airplanes. Now, with that in mind, now that I've got your brain cooking over here, let's start thinking about this thing of the flu, and why would we want to get a flu shot anyway? So let's take a look at our first article over here, Flu Crimes at the CDC. Four-page article put out by www.mercola.com. That's spelled M-E-R-C-O-L-A, okay, mercola.com. Now, this was first published on October 9th, 2005, but this Mercola website is up, and they'll probably have newer, more modern, up-to-the-minute articles on flu. On vaccinations, on disease, and one thing and another. So I would suggest that all of us, you know, just for the hell of it, why don't we take a look at vaccines and vaccination, and in particular this flu vaccine. Let's see whether or not the people who are opposed to it have any merit in their argument. Has it ever occurred to you that maybe these people have an argument that has some merit to it? I know it's not very likely that 264 million people could be deceived and 36 million people have the truth. I know that that's pretty unlikely, but maybe. Could it be? Just in this one case. So, Mercola, this is Doctor, I presume he's a medical doctor, Dr. Mercola. He starts off, he says, if you haven't read the lead story from the last issue on the insanity surrounding the vaccine issue, then please read it now. It was a major blessing that Chiron's, that's C-H-I-R-O-N-S, Chiron's manufacturing facility in Britain was closed because the British government suspended its manufacturing license because of contamination at a Liverpool factory. I truly believe the snafu that eliminated some 50 million vaccines probably was a lifesaver for many men, women, and children here in the United States. Vaccines, like mega-billion drugs, actually do little to protect you from the flu. Most people have been led to believe by the pharmaceutical powers that dominate conventional medicine, and really, like your money, that viruses like the flu bug are the problem, but they aren't. The real problem, most people have weakened and impaired immune systems. Their immune systems are unable to function as they're designed to because of horrendous dietary habits, the same culprit behind the obesity epidemic in this country. Dr. Mark Circus wrote an excellent piece for his association that he agreed to share with us about the history behind the flu vaccine and the method behind the madness of our government's push to strike fear in the hearts of its citizens. This expose provides more motivation to further my personal mission to topple the existing healthcare paradigm. So Dr. Mercola has a personal mission, I'm going to underline that, to topple the existing healthcare paradigm. All right, now George Gordon doesn't have any personal mission to topple the healthcare system. I couldn't care less. If people want to practice euthanasia and suicide, they want to poison themselves with cigarettes, alcohol, vaccines, I don't care. I'm not on any mission to save you. I don't care if you kill yourself. I'm not opposed to people that smoke. I smoked for 9 years. I quit all by myself. I woke up one day and I said, this smoking thing, why am I doing this? Well, because it feels good. If you want to know why did little Georgie Gordon smoke, felt good. I never smoked a bad cigar. I smoked for 9 years, and I enjoyed every puff. I drank Jack Daniel's whiskey. I enjoyed every drink. And then I would suppose the people that are smoking cigarettes enjoy every puff. Gotta love them. Alcoholics drink, and then they enjoy every drink. Get after it. So I presume that if you're drinking and smoking, you've already taken a look at it and came to a conclusion, yeah, that's what I want to do. Which is why I come along and say, well, why would I want to get in the way of your happiness and success? And then the answer is, I don't. And that's why I'm not trying to live your life for you. Now, Dr. Mark Circus, spelled S-I-R-C-U-S, he's an OMD. And I don't know what an OMD is. But whatever this OMD is, he's got that after his name, so you know he's pretty smart. All people that have letters after their name are smart. So dummies like me that don't have those letters. He says, on the 7th of October, the BBC started hitting the public with its yearly dose of hyped flu propaganda. The 1918 Spanish flu pandemic is estimated to have infected up to 1 billion people, half the world's population at the time. The virus killed more people than any other single outbreak of disease, surpassing even the Black Death of the Middle Ages. One can only wonder about the miracle of vaccines in those days. Today in England, with the most modern technology, we have a vaccine plant closing because of contamination. Just imagine during World War I, when the pharmaceutical companies first started mass-producing vaccines. At that time, refrigeration was chancier, and vaccine manufacturing technology was primitive. Federal regulators said an inspection of Clarion's flu vaccine plant in June of 2003 turned up manufacturing problems, meaning that they had ample warning of troubles that over a year later remained unresolved. John Taylor, the FDA's Associate Commissioner for Regulatory Affairs, was correct in saying last year that Clarion wouldn't necessarily be able to discover problems, identify the root cause of the problem, and then take steps to prevent similar issues from arising again. Why would we assume the earlier manufacturers 100 years ago would do any better? Now, Clarion's flu virin vaccine was pulled off the market after the dangerous Serratia bacteria was found in a manufacturing plant that uses the most up-to-the-minute safeguard. Clarion also uses the mercury-based preservative thimerosal as a sterilizing agent in making flu virin to prevent exactly this type of contamination. Before the 1930s, no such powerful preservative was available. It's not beyond reason or statistical probability that the vaccines back then were contaminated or seriously flawed in some way and provoked the epidemic that killed so many in 1918 and 1919. Dr. Eleanor McBean, who lived through the 1918 influenza epidemic, testified, as far as I could find out, the flu hit only the vaccinated. Those who had refused the shots escaped the flu. My family had refused all of the vaccine and vaccination, so we remained well all the time. There was 7 times more disease among the vaccinated soldiers than among the unvaccinated civilians, and the diseases were those that they had been vaccinated against. All right, let's pause here and think about that. It's certainly true that most people had not been vaccinated against this flu. But here in the United States, we had the highest incidence of vaccination in the world. Well, we had the best medical services in the world. And so people here in the United States were being vaccinated against the flu. And we had a very low incidence of death here in this country. Only 600,000 people died from the 1918 Spanish flu here in the United States. But the death toll among those that had been vaccinated was much higher than the death toll among those who had not been vaccinated. Aha. Now, what that tells us is this, that being vaccinated didn't prevent you from getting killed, didn't prevent you from getting the flu, but fewer people here in the United States got the flu. Now, was that because of the vaccine, or was that because of the general overall health standards in the United States, that is cleanliness, number one, and waste disposal, toilets, sewage facilities, and so on, than, say, people in Mexico or Namibia or South Africa or some other country in the world? Those factors also need to be factored in. But a billion people, or about one-half of all the people in the world, came down with the flu. But out of a billion, only 100 million died. So the death rate was about 10%, about 1 out of 10 who got the flu died. It was really only about 1 out of 20 worldwide. And your chances of getting the flu were 50-50, and your chances of dying from that flu after you got it was only 10%. So, you know, the truth of the matter is your chances of getting killed in a car wreck, a tornado, or a hurricane are about the same or maybe better than dying from the flu. But you notice that people aren't nearly as afraid of tornadoes, hurricanes, or auto accidents as they are the flu. Huh? It's 1 out of 20, 1 out of 10. It's high. It's bad. I'm going to have to give you a reminder here that we're about out of time. Pick this up next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll take it up here next time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.